Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
And welcome to Stick Together, Australia's only show all about workers' rights and social justice. Stick Together's produced at 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne and broadcast across the country on the Community Radio Network. I'm Diana Beaumont. And remember, live radio isn't the only way you can listen to Stick Together anymore. You can subscribe to a Stick Together podcast at the website 3cr.org.au or like our page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. So do keep in touch with the program. Catch up on any shows you might miss. Tomorrow, Wednesday the 22nd of October, preschool teachers in Victoria will take strike action for the first time in 10 years after 14 months of failed negotiations with the early learning peak body. Later in the program today, we'll be joined by Martel Menz, who's the Deputy Vice President of the Australian Education Union, who'll tell us more. But first, an update on the Royal Commission into so-called trade union corruption. Attorney General George Brandis's decision to extend the Royal Commission by 12 months came as no surprise. This will take the conclusion of the commission and the issuing of its report much closer to the next federal election, giving the Liberal Party fresh fodder for scaremongering about Labor's ties to the union movement. Back in June on Stick Together, we spoke to Jim Maher, freelance writer and former editor of Workers Online for Unions New South Wales. Jim's also author of the 2003 book First the Verdict about the Building Industry Royal Commission, better known as the Coal Royal Commission. And Jim's joining us again today to give us an update on this latest Royal Commission. Jim, thanks for being on Stick Together once again.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, Diana.
All right, so before we get into this current Royal Commission, let's go to the most obvious precedent, which is the coal inquiry into the building industry unions from 2001 to 2003. For people who missed our interview with you back in June, can you explain for us why the coal inquiry, also established by a federal Liberal government, gives you cause for concern about this current Royal Commission into union corruption?
Yeah, well, look, it was an ideologically driven Royal Commission that really sought to return predetermined findings and did so. And those findings were about restricting trade union rights and eventually restricting wages, job security and safety in the workplace. And this one is operating very much along the same lines.
And the findings of the Coal Royal Commission were used to justify the introduction of the Australian Building and Construction Commission.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the operation that Hedgkiss has been running now off and on for the best part of 10 years. And as I say, I think it was the Chief Commissioner of the Victorian Police and a representative of the Federal Police told the Senate Committee that they hadn't received any evidence from Hedgkiss's operation that had led to a single criminal conviction anywhere across Australia.
But it did, of course, produce a lot of salacious newspaper headlines.
Yes, and this one looks like trumping it.
So let's run through some of the cases that the Royal Commission into Union Corruption has heard recently. The CFMEU is really the union at the heart of this Royal Commission, the CFMEU being the Construction, Forestry, Mining and Energy Union. Tell us, what are the main allegations against the CFMEU and which states does it cover?
Well, they're pretty limitless, really. There's allegations of unlawful industrial activity. There's, in fact, allegations of major criminal activity. including bribery, corruption, intimidation, the works. But almost exclusively, they're not backed by evidence. Or if they are backed by evidence, it's extremely controversial, and the people putting that evidence on the record are either demonstrably conflicted or have extremely poor records in terms of their credibility. And that's one of the things that royal commissions or prosecutorial royal commissions seem to pay little attention to, the credit of the people that are producing the evidence. And I mean, we just heard last week, I think it was, from Jim Burns in Sydney, alleging a corrupt payment to a union official, and Burns has an appalling record. And Burns is the only person who's claimed to see the mysterious flying envelope with $3,000 being passed from an alleged crime figure to a union official. And now Burns, I mean, he's been done for deemed importation of heroin, for smashing up a solicitor's office with a baseball bat. He's been named as a person of interest by a coroner in the death of a man who was found with a heroin needle hanging out of his arm. You know, I mean, I don't know how Jim Burns and credit go in the same sentence, really. And yet, really, he's the commission's star witness in this case. He's the only witness that's given evidence to this point to this effect. And he's also appeared on ABC TV and in the Fairfax media telling this story. And, I mean, last week, under cross-examination, Burns admitted that he'd signed a deed in favour of the alleged crime figure he said handed over the money. He'd signed a deed in his favour that's worth millions of dollars that he's now trying to have the courts overrule. So not only is his credibility dodgy, to put it mildly, but he obviously has a massive conflict of interest in this issue. And as for the union official who's alleged to have received this money, he's adamant that he's never seen the bloke before in his life until he appeared at the Royal Commission. So, I mean, this is just an example of the sort of people they serve up because they don't have to obey the normal rules and rigours that go around the selection and presentation of evidence.
So a lot of the allegations against the CFMEU in the Royal Commission concern funds that the union runs, whether it's the CBUS superannuation fund or the union's training fund. Tell us, what's the political significance of the Royal Commission targeting funds administered by unions or partly administered by unions?
Well, I think partly administered by unions is an important factor that this Royal Commission's continually chosen to overlook, because all those funds are equally administered by employers. In other words, if the funds are doing wrong, then the MBA or the Contractors Association also is doing wrong. The political implications and the political interest stems, I think, from two factors. One, that to some extent there's finance flowing through to the unions from some of these funds, very limited finance, mainly by way of directors' fees. But more importantly, perhaps, that they sit on the foundations of collective bargaining. And so the antagonism to them really stems from a hostility of the Royal Commission and its authors to the concept of collectivism and specifically to collective bargaining. So what you're going to see is they're going to bring down recommendations to constrict the ability of unions to collectively bargain. And they will target superannuation, they will target income protection and redundancy funds, and they will target union training and they will do it through an attack on collective bargaining.
In a way, indirectly arguing that the role of unions should only be a very narrow one in terms of just negotiating pay or very simple working conditions. And it's in that way akin to the way the Howard government tried to limit what unions could bargain for in EBAs by introducing non-permittable clauses, things that unions couldn't put in EBAs, even if they were able to reach agreement with the employer on them.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true, but I think this goes further than that. I think in this instance, the view of trade unions that's being expressed here is that they should restrict themselves to a helpline, that really being active on the job, being visible on the job, is pretty much impermissible. And there will certainly be an attack not only on collective bargaining, but also on the rights of unions to visit their members in workplaces and their rights to visit workplaces under occupational health and safety laws.
Another union that has appeared before the Royal Commission to answer charges of bribery in relation to a training fund is the Maritime Union of Australia on the West Australian docks. And before I ask you to comment on that, I'd just like to play a brief clip of the Secretary of the Maritime Union of Australia in WA, Chris Kane, defending those allegations. Let's listen to that before I ask you to respond.
It's transparent. I've been in this union for the last 12 years. We've had relationships with like-minded companies that have saw, like the MUA, the need for training. And I've got to say, you know, we're talking about these allegations in 2008, 2007. So we're talking 6 or 7 years ago. And we've seen, the MUA seen, that there was a need for training for these major projects coming online 2 or 3 years down the track. We've seen, the MUA, that we clearly needed to identify the training that needed to be done, because our workforce is an ageing workforce, and we put a circular out, and it came back that our average age in the offshore oil and gas was 49 years of age.
So that was Chris Kane from the MUA talking about the rationale for their training fund. Jim Maher, was there any evidence presented at the Royal Commission that there's been bribery involved in the way that employers pay into the training fund?
No, not at all. Not in those terms. But the way this Royal Commission's operating is that any level of agreement, certainly financial cooperation between unions and employers, is regarded as, if not corrupt, then highly suspicious. So it's a long way from what you might call the progressive sort of West European view of trade unions. It's much more down the southern states of America sort of avenue, that unions are a menace to society, that they shouldn't be encouraged in any way, and that in fact, where unions cooperate with employers, they too should be under the microscope. And I think it's that sort of ideological base that's infecting all the work of this Royal Commission. And, you know, what Christy Kane said there was absolutely correct. And again, that's precisely reflected in the situation with the CFMEU in Queensland. Now, Council Assisting Stelgar frankly made an absolute goose of himself with his attack on apprentice training in Queensland. He made some absolutely ridiculous assertions that were purely ideological. But what they found out with the CFMEU in Queensland and its particular training scheme is it's been massively successful. And in fact, that's a misnomer, and it's a misnomer that Stelgar made. It's not actually a training scheme. It's a scholarship scheme. So they look after the apprentices. On average, people who start 3 and 4 year construction industry apprenticeships, about 40 to 50% of those people finish and go into the industry. Now, under the CFMEU's Queensland scholarship scheme, that figure's 85%. So, like the MUA and WA, the scheme started when employers dropped the ball and stopped training apprentices. The union picked it up in Queensland, and when they showed it was successful, it's been massively supported by employers who are getting the benefit out of it. Fully trained, qualified tradespeople. So it sounds like the Queensland construction situation is very similar to the WA situation. Now, in the Royal Commission, they had, I forget, it might have been three or four employers, and they called them as witnesses, and they all said, no, the scheme's worked. They were more than happy to pay because they got value out of it. But that in itself, because the people driving the commission are so ideological in their approach, that's a reason. That's not a reason for celebration. That's a reason for suspicion. Mm. And it's the same up in Queensland with construction.
We're speaking to Jim Maher about the latest news from the Royal Commission into trade union corruption. Jim, one of the most anticipated appearances before the commission last month was none other than Julia Gillard, there to answer more than 20-year-old allegations that money from an AWU slush fund was used to renovate her home in 1995. Did Gillard's hearing uncover anything new?
Well, no, it didn't. I mean, how can you realistically decide an issue that's quarter of a century old, you know, and the witnesses to it are getting thin on the ground and their memories are fading? I mean, Julia Gillard basically wiped the floor with them, but it didn't take it anywhere.
But this hearing in particular reveals the political nature of this Royal Commission. The former boyfriend of Julia Gillard has long since left the AWU. He's not a serving official. So it's not a hearing into the union. It's essentially a hearing into the integrity of Julia Gillard, which doesn't have any present and relevant ramifications for the union movement as it stands today.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, it was utterly about the relationship between the Labor Party and the trade union movement. So the idea there was simply to dirty up the Labor Party and the latest, of course, ALP Prime Minister by implication, by association with the trade union movement. That was the intention of it. And although, in any objective assessment, it was completely unsuccessful, some of that muck will stick.
Jim, my last question is, how much is the taxpayer going to pay for this Royal Commission, especially given that George Brandis has recently announced it will be extended for another 12 months?
Well, I don't know. You might be looking at going into same sort of areas of Coal Commission, and that managed to chew up 60 or 63 million taxpayer dollars. You've got to be looking towards those sort of numbers again, I would have thought.
Well, Jim, thanks for joining us again today on Stick Together. Jim Maher is a freelance writer and the former editor of Workers Online for Unions in New South Wales. Jim, I'm sure we'll be in touch again in a few months to hear the latest from the Royal Commission.
Good on you, Diana. Good luck.
Stick together.
You're listening to Stick Together on Community Radio.
Victorian preschool teachers will take strike action tomorrow, Wednesday the 22nd of October, or yesterday if you're listening to the repeat of the program. The strike has come after 14 months of failed negotiations with the Early Learning Association of Australia and the Municipal Association of Australia for two different EBAs for early childhood workers. This strike action is the first in 10 years for Victorian preschool teachers and will culminate in a rally to Parliament tomorrow. Joining me to talk more about this industrial action and working conditions in the early childhood sector is Martel Mentz, who's the Deputy Vice President of the sector for the Australian Education Union. Martel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Diana.
So some parents might be wondering why their child's kinder isn't taking any industrial action this Wednesday. Can you just clarify quickly for us? It's only some preschools that are covered by this agreement, am I right?
Yes, that's correct, Diana. Look, we're negotiating two agreements simultaneously. Our members are only able to take protective industrial action in pursuit of the single interest agreement, which is being bargained between, obviously, the AAU and the Early Learning Association of Australia. For the other agreement, that's the agreement that covers preschools and kindergartens within local governments, where unfortunately our members can't take protective industrial action in that circumstance.
And what have been the main sticking points in the AU's negotiations with the Early Learning Association?
Sure. Look, the two main issues that we're pursuing through these negotiations are around workload issues for our teachers and our educators, as well as salaries and what we believe are fair and reasonable wages for our preschool workforce. Look, what has occurred in the last few years is a massive reform agenda in the early childhood sector. And since about 2009, we've had some really welcome changes, in fact, to our sector and to preschools. But along with those reforms has certainly come an increase in workload for teachers and educators. And so our members would say, yes, many welcome changes, but we do need to have that matched with the appropriate resourcing and time for people to, you know, really plan and deliver their high-quality programs for children. On the issue of wages, our claims, we think, are pretty straightforward and reasonable in relation to teachers. People may not be aware, but sadly, our preschool teachers don't earn the same salaries as primary and secondary school teachers. And in fact, there's a 5% gap at the entry level currently, and an almost 9% gap at the top of the pay scale for teachers. And in relation to our co-educators, these are the wonderful people that work alongside our qualified teachers. And they're people who also have qualifications. Majority of them have either Certificate 3 or diplomas in children's services. And they have been required to undertake many more responsibilities in the last couple of years. They've been required to upgrade their qualifications. And their salaries are still really, really poor. We're talking about people on about $16, $17, $18 an hour. Mm. And these are people who are educating, you know, our young children.
And something that I'm sure parents are concerned about is retention of skilled staff in the sector. Is retention a problem given that pay is quite low and it sounds like the pressure of workload is very great?
Absolutely. I mean, we're hearing some really harrowing stories from our members, very experienced teachers who have been doing this work in the early childhood sector for many, many years, who are just saying to us the workload is unsustainable, the salaries are so unfair that it is forcing them out either into early retirement for some of them, but for some teachers it is meaning that they're leaving and going to work in the primary school sector because, look, the fact is that most teachers have a dual qualification. They can elect to teach in a preschool or a primary school setting, and so they're making those choices. They're voting with their feet, unfortunately.
And one unique challenge in the preschool sector, I hear, is for teachers who work in a kindergarten that is sort of managed by a parent committee, which is quite an unusual situation to be in, where your employer is the parent of the children that you're teaching. Is that a common scenario?
Yeah, look, it is. I mean, the majority of Victorian preschools are managed by volunteer parent committees of management, and it is a bit of a unique circumstance. And typically, you know, on the whole, it can work very, very well, parents working in partnership with educators. But it does also come with some challenges, and it can sometimes present some difficulties when, as you've alluded to, not only do those parents manage the kindergarten, they are the employer of the staff, and of course educators are teaching those children. What I have to say though in relation to parents is the incredible support we're getting for this campaign. We know that parents are really willing to stand with us and fight on these issues. And I have to say, you know, tomorrow the stop work on Wednesday will present some challenges to some parents, and we, you know, we acknowledge that. It is a difficult thing for any of our members to be closing their preschools, and it's, you know, it's not action that we take lightly, but it is really heartening to know that we've got parents, you know, standing with us and speaking up, you know, in support of this really important campaign.
We're speaking to Martel Mentz, who is the Deputy Vice President for the Early Childhood Sector of the Australian Education Union, about strike action that preschool teachers will take tomorrow, Wednesday the 22nd of October, in Victoria. Another campaign that the AEU has been running is for preschool funding. The federal government has guaranteed that it will continue to fund 5 hours of preschool education in 2015, with the state government funding another 10 hours. Is there any promise of ongoing funding, or is this something that the union is going to have to fight for every year?
The unfortunate answer, Diana, is yes. As you've rightly mentioned, it is a win just for another 12 months of funding to get us through to the end of next year, and that's just simply unacceptable. So yes, we will absolutely, you know, we'll find ourselves as a union with our members and preschool communities back in campaign mode very, very soon to fight for permanent secure funding, so that there is just, you know, none of this uncertainty for families and, of course, for their children.
And in light of this lack of ongoing funding for preschool education, can you contrast the relative importance of preschool education in the Australian government's agenda and other OECD countries?
Yeah. Look, it's a pretty poor track record, I have to say, in relation to the current Commonwealth government. I think what is most disappointing to us as a union and our members is that we had seen such positive changes under the former federal government, under the Labor government. And whilst it came with some challenges, we acknowledge that, ultimately it was based on really solid research about the sort of high-quality programs that deliver the best outcomes to our young children. You know, the weight of the research is there in support of investing early to get those outcomes as children grow into later years. So sadly, we're not seeing that kind of acknowledgement and support from our governments, both at Commonwealth and state levels, I have to say. And, you know, when we compare ourselves to other parts of the world, and we look at the sort of dollars invested in early childhood education and care, we are so far down on the list. It's quite embarrassing, to be honest, given we're such a wealthy country, such an educated country, and yet we're not seeing enough investment in our young children.
Well, it just highlights the importance of this industrial campaign you're waging, as well as the political one, to increase the emphasis that our government puts on preschool education. Martel, thank you so much for joining us. Martel is the Deputy Vice President of the Early Childhood Sector for the Australian Education Union. And Martel, all the best for the strike tomorrow on Wednesday.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Diana.
And that's all we have time for on Stick Together this week. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can send an email to sticktogether3cr@gmail.com, or you can find us on the web or on Facebook. Thanks to the Community Broadcasting Foundation for its support of the program. I'm Diana Beaumont. Thanks for listening, and do tune in again at the same time next week.